I've asked all the children to stay out here as sort of an object lesson to why we need this lesson today. But today we're going... That's a tough cry. Huh? Just... Okay, yeah, exactly. If you didn't get that, just give it time. Today we're continuing on our Proverbs series, and I know that you probably noticed if you're spending time in this book that it says quite a lot about parenting and about children. And in fact, a big chunk of this book is actually kind of styled as a father giving instruction to his son. So you have this wiser, older father taking the time to just impart this wisdom to his son. So really, parenting and parenthood and children are major themes in this book. And so for those of you who aren't raising children right now, congratulations. But that's tough this morning. They're the winners right now. But actually, I think a lot of what we're going to talk about actually has a broader application than just literally your children, your young children. But of course, that's kind of going to be our focus. So hang with me, and I think you'll be able to get a little bit out of it. And if not, then hopefully at the end, we're going to do things a little differently today. It's not going to be just me talking. Hopefully at the end, you'll be able to help us with some of your wisdom if you've been through all of this mess before. Okay? Parenting. Let's get started with this. This is a verse that everyone knows from Proverbs, right? Train up a child in the way, in Proverbs 22 says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Great. Good to know that. Now, that's all we need to know. That's your lesson, right? Just do a good job as a parent. That's basically what that says, right? Do a good job. Okay, I didn't know whether that was something I should be doing or not. But there it is. Okay, let us pray. Train up a child the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. That's kind of that statement is, as all of us who are parents, that's kind of our hopes, right? I mean, that's what we want. And it's that simple, is it? You know, the thing about being a parent, no one ever told me is how easy it would be, right? Said nobody ever. Because it really isn't, is it? The hardest job you'll ever have. Train up a child in the way he should go. When he is old, he will not depart from it. So this is our goal, is to craft, to help craft people who are image bearers of God. To help craft alongside God, to help guide and craft people who are what God designed them to be, right? That's the way he should go. That's the way all people should go. All people should be what God made them to be, right? And so our job as parents is to come alongside God and assist him and kind of act in this role to help train, to help bring up, to help craft these image bearers of God. And it says when you get on that right track, it said and that partnership with you and God and with that other little person, which is going to be a major theme we're going to talk about today, when all three of you and that other person and God are on the same team, you're on the same path, when everything is as it should be in all three parties, it lasts, right? It lasts. What else does Proverbs say about parenting? Those of you who have read it, what is it? What's the main thing it says about parenting? Yeah, discipline, right? Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far away. Yeah, and this is there. It goes on and on and on. I didn't list all of them like I did with the quarrelsome women verses last week because it's not quite as fun. But folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far away. Do not withhold discipline from a child. If you punish them with the rod, they will not die. Not going to kill them. Right? And that seems to be kind of one of the major themes about Proverbs in terms of parenting is discipline. So that maybe that's the secret. If you just beat your children enough, do they turn out all right? Is this what this book of the Bible is teaching us? No. I think it's for some people, you know, through history that I can think of who have that sort of a tendency anyway. It's kind of dangerous to see this in this light. And you sort of become, you build yourself up. If you have this tendency to be this tyrant, and you kind of use this as ammunition, that all it takes is just a firmer hand with your children. Right? The way to craft the right human being out of your child is to beat everything else off of them. Right? That heavy, heavy hand. But, you know, you can't deny that this is here. Do not withhold discipline from a child. What in the world is discipline? What we're talking about here is musar, is discipline or instruction, right? Discipline is not equivalent to punishment. Though, you know, in fact, a lot of times punishment will be part of discipline. But discipline is training, right? It's teaching, instruction, right? Sometimes that requires, you know, the carrot, and sometimes it requires the stick, right? Whatever form those things take. But half of the time, this word is rendered discipline. You know, there's a few other instances, but the major, vast majority of the way this Hebrew word is rendered in the Scriptures, half the time it's discipline. Half the time it's instruction. As is in Proverbs 1 here, the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, for gaining wisdom and instruction. Musar, same word. For gaining wisdom and instruction, for understanding words of insight, for receiving instruction and prudent behavior, doing what is right and just and fair. So this is the opening of the book of Proverbs. It's talking about the purpose of this book, and the purpose of this book is musar. It's instruction, it's discipline, right? Think about the other ways we would use the word discipline in a very churchy manner is what? What another form of the word, English word discipline, do we use a lot in church? Chad just used it a few minutes ago, huh? Disciple, yeah. A disciple means learner. Someone who is receiving instruction. So if we think about these verses, do not hold discipline, whether that is correction or chastisement of some sort, but do not withhold instruction, training, discipleship, mentoring from a child. If you punish them, if you force them, if you use your chastisement, if you direct them on this path, they will not die. All right? And another, think about discipline in Proverbs in another light here, okay? I want you to think about the way I'm describing discipline and instruction in this light here. This is drawing a metaphor. My son, do not despise the Lord's discipline, and do not resent His rebuke, because the Lord disciplines those He loves. Just like a father does for the son he delights in. Do we discipline our children? We train our children. We try to craft our children into these, you know, fulfilled human beings who they were designed to be, the people God designed them to be, the image bearers of God. We try to train our children to be that sort of people because we delight in them, because we love them more than we could possibly imagine. You know, I don't need to tell you that. You guys, you know, we're on this same page, I think. Most everyone here, because the Lord disciplines those He loves, just like a father, the son He delights in. And let's flip this metaphor back. This is comparing a God to a good father who delights in his children, but yet tries to push them on the right path and corrects their behavior and gives them these boundaries and teaches them and instructs them in wisdom. Let's flip the metaphor back around. This is how God treats us. So this is yet another case of how we are supposed to act like God does. Being a good parent is part of bearing the image of God. Alright? Being the sort of parent that we're going to talk about today is part of being like God. It's part of following Jesus. Okay? In the New Testament, I'm going to look at a couple of things here from Paul's writings in Ephesians. And this both of these come out of the therefore of some of Paul's letters, right? There's the pattern, you see it most clearly in these two, in Ephesians and Colossians. But there's this pattern to Paul's writings where he builds this case of theology in the beginning of the letter, right? In Ephesians, it's, you are handpicked by God. You are saved solely by God's grace. It's none of your effort. You are saved by God's grace when you believe, and He made you, you know, to do to His handcrafted you. You are His handiwork. You are His masterpiece to do good works that He, you know, selected you for from the very beginning of time, right? And therefore act like this, and it gives us two or three chapters of how people are supposed to act to bear the image of God. Part of it is this mutual submission, right? And it talks about how husbands and wives should mutually submit to each other, mutually choose each other, right? How the wives are to submit to their husbands, but husbands are to die to their wives and cherish them and build them up like these queens, right? In Ephesians, it says, the next one says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. So kids, part of your job to follow of following God, none of them are looking, that's okay. A part of a child's, a huge part of a child's job as a follower of Jesus, as a disciple of Christ, as an image bearer of God, a huge part of a child's job is to follow their parents, is to obey their parents. All right? This is right. This is the first commandment with a promise, so that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy a long life on earth. So does this mean there's this magical, this is like this magical promise, like you cast this spell. If you listen to what your mom says to do, if you clean your room when she says to, and you pick up trash and you don't do stupid stuff, then God is going to strike you with a magic wand and your life's going to be great. Is that what this means? No, it means if your parents are doing their job in partnership with God, they're trying to craft you into the image bearer of God that you were intended to be, your life is going to be good if you do this. If you enter into this three-way partnership with God and your parents and these children, then their life is going to be good. Then their life is going to go well with them on earth. Right? And all these couplets in these therefore sections of Ephesians and Colossians. The first one is expected. Like the first one for the wife was, wife, submit to your husband. Yeah. We can all say amen to that, right? But the second one is a little bit more unexpected. It's almost like Paul sticking a knife in. Right? It says, fathers. First one is children, obey your parents. Yay. Second one is fathers. Do not exasperate your children. All right. Don't be a tyrant. You know, being a parent is not license for tyranny over another human being, which is not what our children are. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and the instruction of the Lord. Do not be this heavy-handed tyrant, but you still exercise this responsibility for this training, this instruction, this discipline, and yes, this chastisement. All right? But it's a completely different perspective. You're not bringing them up to your satisfaction. You're bringing them up in the fear and the knowledge and the training and the instruction of the Lord. You're bringing them up God's way to be God's people, right? And this, This is really Colossians 3, not Ephesians 3. This is the counterpart to this out of the same section of a different letter, the therefore section. The point of all of the theology he lays in the first part of the book. Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. This is the way he designed parents and children to be. And fathers, do not embitter your children, or they will become discouraged. So there's an imperative to both our kids, right, to be the right sort of human being, the sort of human being who is an image bearer of God, right? And part of that is entering into this partnership with your parents and God and listening to what they say, trusting that they, as followers of God, know what they're doing, right? Now, the same imperative to us as parents. Do not embitter your children. Do not discourage them. Treat them like human beings, true human beings, image bearers of God. Who that, yes, you have a responsibility to disciple, a responsibility to discipline, a responsibility for instruction and training. You have a responsibility for crafting of who they turn into, right? Look at this one here in Mark 10. It says, people were bringing little children to Jesus for him to place his hands on them, but the disciples rebuked him. When Jesus saw this, he was indignant. He just couldn't believe that his disciples weren't letting people bring their kids to him. And he said to them, because, you know, what they were doing, the disciples, was perfectly normal in their cultural context. And really, it's normal in ours too. That children are second-class humans, and that the adults are what's important in life, right? When Jesus saw this, he was indignant. He said to them, let the little children come to me, and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of God belongs to such of these. Truly, I tell you, anyone who will not receive the kingdom of God like a little child will never enter it. And he took the children in his arms, placed his hands on them, and blessed them. You know, it's interesting that this is all in all three of the Synoptic Gospels or some variation of this or a different instance of something very similar to this occurring in all three Synoptic Gospels. And you start to realize how that Jesus, right? You know, the Savior, the resurrected King of the universe. What did he think of kids? He liked them. He thought they were incredibly important, right? He took the children in his arms, placed his hands on them, and blessed them. So if we're going to act like Jesus, if we call ourselves Christians, which means, you know, we follow Jesus, we want to be like Jesus, what's the context? What do we get out of this that we should be doing? What's our imperative? What did he do to the kids? Yeah. He blessed them. Yeah, you're right. He did. No, you're good. That wasn't a rhetorical question, I don't suppose. He did not marginalize the children, right? He blessed them. And again, I think I've mentioned this a few times up to this point. But John 13, and we kind of take this as kind of foundational in the Christian life, and it comes at a very important part of this book, a very important part of Jesus' life at the end, where he is coming down to the end of his life, one of his last nights on earth, and he is laying out, he's kind of pouring out everything to his disciples, right? Saying, this is how things are, this is how things, you've all this stuff is in the past, this is the new way of being a human being, this is how you follow me, this is how you are now the people of God, right? He says, a new commandment I give you. And that's a huge statement, right, to a Jewish person, right? The new commandment. You know, you have so many commandments of how you're supposed to do your life. You know, not just the Ten Commandments, but all these laws, all these regulations. Jesus says, I'm giving you a new commandment. I'm replacing all of that. This is your new focus. This is the new definition of what it means to follow God. It's a new commandment I give you. Love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. And by this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, that I am disciplining you, that I am instructing you, that you are following me, that you are my children, if you love one another. We're to love people like God loved us, right? We're to love each other like God loved us. That includes our kids. Well, they're image-bearing humans just like we are. And we owe this same unimaginable degree of love to them that Jesus gave to us. So, kind of the background, the foundation of this. Another one out of Proverbs. Discipline your children, they will give you peace. If you just beat them enough, they'll be quiet. Right? No. Discipline your children, they will give you peace. Not peace and quiet, but peace. Right?
Never
be exactly. And they will bring you the delights you desire. If you teach your children, if you instruct, if you help craft them into the humans that God designed them to be, it will bring shalom, it will bring peace, and it will bring fulfillment into your life. Okay, there. So just now, go home, do a good job, right? No. Now's when we're going to get a little bit of help. But I want to think about this first. I think this is a case where it really looks to me like some of the sociological, psychological stuff really... certain strains of that really just pair perfectly with the Bible. Because what have we been talking about here? Okay, look. Don't worry about the words. Okay, I shouldn't have put those up there first. Look at this graph. Okay, on this x-axis, we'll think about this is discipline or control, right? Or another word would be boundaries, right? Or imperatives for the child's behavior. And the y-axis, and this will go from zero to no control, no discipline, no boundaries whatsoever, all the way up to 100, right? And look at that love or affection, right? Or what's the other word they typically use in this? Troy? Maybe, I guess love, okay. Love, affection, engagement, maybe? Engagement, okay. From zero, there's no affection, no love, no engagement, all the way up to 100, right? And these are kind of the four, most people think you can, kind of think about these four quadrants of this graph as four parenting styles, okay? And we all, at least I do, I think we kind of move around from style to style, from quadrant to quadrant, based on, your mood and where you're at and what's going on in the world and whether your child's being a little, whatever, or not. But think about this. Okay, so in this one, let's start with this one. In the upper left-hand part of this graph, there's no. I don't want to start with that one. Start with this one, authoritarian. So there's high amounts of expectation, not in terms of, well, maybe in this case, in terms of you got to do really good on this test and you have to do really good in sports, but expectation in terms of your behavior, expectations and what you're supposed to act like, right? So high degree of expectations on what you're supposed to act like, high degree of boundaries and rigidity, and high degree of control, right? But a low degree of affection and engagement, right? And can you think of people who have been like that? Right. And you kind of end up with it, well, it's called this authoritarian style of parenting. Where there's this extremely high degree of expectation and control and a low degree of engagement and and affection. Right. And you can, I think, kind of think about this like our grandparents' generation. I think a lot of those folks kind of, and actually it was like, Troy can talk more about this later, but I think like sociologically, it was a cultural thing, and even academically, this is how it was expected, that you should treat your kids like this. Don't pick up the child when it's crying, and don't coddle your children, and you just beat them and whatever, right? This extremely high degree of control and expectation, but low degree of affection, right? This authoritarian style of parenting. But then the opposite of that, would be the permissive parents. Okay, and I think we can see a lot of that more like this, the brand new generation coming along, right? Where you have extremely high degree of affection and love, you know, which is a good thing. And but because you're afraid of messing that kid up or whatever the case may be, afraid of doing something wrong, that just anything goes, right? That there is no boundaries, there's no discipline and training, that there's no expectations of the behavior. Just let that child discover who it's going to be, right? And that your expectations for that person's life aren't valid. And just let him, you know, just free love and so on and so forth, right? And I think that's kind of the pendulum swinging from the authoritarian style into this permissive style. And which of these two are biblical? No. Right. No. Neither. Right? And probably, you know, arguably the worst of all, you know, you have some parents who don't have any expectations whatsoever for their children because they just don't care enough to, right? So there's a low degree of love and affection and a low degree of control and expectations. How does that turn out for the child? Not good at all. I think we see, you know, from a lot of the stories I hear from, you know, Mandy and the kindergarten teachers, this is very prevalent today. It, you know, it makes you worry about how, what's going to happen to these kids. But now, well, think about what it looks like to have a high degree of expectations for your children's behavior and expectations for what kind of people they turn out to be, right? And you're rightfully exercising the right degree of control over their lives and what they do, right? And the right degree of discipline, high degree of, you know, training and instruction. At the same time that the affection and the love for that child is off the charts, right? Now, does that, I mean, this comes out, what's the woman's name? You know, man, some kind of sociologist you guys are. Baum something or other? Yeah, something like that. Baum something or other. Anyway, this is like commonly accepted, right? Commonly accepted in the professional field of psychology, sociology, it's, you know, the four styles of parenting. But do you see how well that molds with what I've been talking about from the Bible? Yes. Yeah. That's pretty cool, isn't it? And like I said, I think all of us in here who are parents can probably identify with slipping from one quadrant into the other from time to time, right? Yeah. Yeah. But I think overall what God calls us to be are the sorts of parents who have, who accept the responsibility of having expectations and control for our kids, right? Well, that's a response. They calls us to accept that responsibility to train up our children in the way we should walk. At the same time, for this, on that, so we're way over here on the x-axis, but we're also way up here on the y-axis because we are defined by our love for people, including our children, right? Okay. Now, I'm going to invite Troy to come up and say whatever he wants to about that. Then we're going to do something else in a little bit, okay?
I'm definitely not the best parent in the world. I have a long ways to go, and I'm definitely not judgmental to anybody here and how they parent. Never been in your shoes. You know your kids a billion times better than I'd ever know them anyway. So it's definitely not me just sitting and having all these judgmental thoughts about everybody. Good. And I also want to say this, that good parenting is a correlation towards your kids doing well. It's not a causality. Your kid's going to have their own free will. And I see a lot of great parents that their kids don't do so hot. And so don't ever think that, you know, I'm the direct causality as to why my child is not prospering. Okay, there's a lot of other factors in it, but you're definitely a high correlation. So the biggest thing when you're parenting, and I'm going to talk about direct interactions with kids today. Parenting, there's a lot of non-direct interactions with kids too that influence them. So whenever I'm talking with a kid or whatever, the biggest thing is to know what they're wanting out of this interaction. Okay, so are they attention seeking? Is there a certain thing they're trying to achieve, and that's why I'm having to redirect them? And is that something that I want to reinforce? Okay, because if it's attention seeking stuff, you have to know how your behaviors are reinforcing how they're going to act, right? Parenting is like a science experiment. I know everybody can relate to having to do science fair when they were kids. Well, you have like an hypothesis, like I'm going to interact with my kid this way. And then my hypothesis is they're going to react the way I want them to, right? But that's not always the case. We can't always predict how the kid's going to react and whenever we direct them. So, we're looking at, you know, are they wanting this reward or are they wanting this attention or whatever, right? If we look at behaviors and we say, well, if they're trying to strive for something because they want this reward in the end, right? Most of the time, that's not really sustainable. What I'm saying is it's just like being a Christian. If you're being a Christian because you want to go to heaven, that's probably not the right reason, right? If I got a kid brushing his teeth because he wants $2, that's probably not the right reason to brush your teeth. So if you can, the first step should be I'm trying to teach my kid empathy so that they know how they influence other people, and that should be their primary motivation to change. And then we're going to, you know, that's the big message that, you know, you influence this many people. And if they can't grasp that concept, either they're too young or they're still wanting these rewards or something, that's when we implement consequences and discipline and all that stuff. So a consequence, it's not really worth anything unless it affects their life. You know, I know this sounds terrible, but like it has to bring their quality of life down. Or why else would you change? You know, if it doesn't affect them, then they have no motivation to change. Let's say we implement this consequence or reward or whatever. Let's say they have a baseline that's down here. I always relate it to like test scores. If your kid got a 30 on a math test, I know this sounds super counterintuitive. If the next math test they take and they get a 32, you need to say, hey, thanks for the improvement, right? Thanks for that you showed effort and that it's getting better. Now, obviously, you still want to say, this is not where we want to be at, right? But you don't want to discourage them by saying, well, you were awful again, you know. No, it's like a snowball. It's either you're going to get it rolling down the negative or rolling down the positive. It's not I'm trying to put my kid in this hole that society wants him to be in. You know, he's his own individual, and I'm just trying to help him achieve whatever the best he can be, right? It's not a race. It's not a competition. I know schools and society always put us in places that we want our kid to get so far and make this benchmark, and they got to be better than these other kids because that's what those benchmarks are based off of, is based off of how everybody else is doing, right? So it's definitely a challenge. What I always tell people when we're going to prompt kids is you want your voice to matter. You don't want to say 20 times, like, I'm going to send you a timeout, right? Like, my boss gets on me about paperwork all the time. About the fifth or sixth time, I don't really believe her. She's going to do anything, right? So I'm not real motivated to change. I'm glad she's not here today, but It's the same way with the kid, you know. I'm not looking at saying this a billion times, you know. I'm going to say it one time, and then the next time I'm going to say, if you do this, this happens, and then if you don't do this, this happens. And then enact that consequence and see if it works. You know, you are like a scientist in this regard. You're trying to figure out what their reaction's going to be. And it's trial and error, too, because your kid's going to evolve through this process. They're not going to think that the same consequence matters as much if you do it 10 times, right? They've gotten used to it and already adapted, so you got to adapt with them. Kids are extremely smart. They're survivalists. They adapt a lot quicker than we do, actually. Okay, their schedules change way more than ours do, and they adapt quicker than we do. Their quality of life is going to have more of an influx. Just like if I go to McDonald's, you know, my quality of life probably went down. But a kid, their quality of life, if they go to McDonald's or get this $10 toy, it like jumps sky high, you know. I mean, as an adult, how often do you spend $10 and your quality of life jumps sky high? Not very often, right? So, and as parents, we want to focus on, I can't forcibly make any kid do anything. You know, I have a almost 2-year-old, and his birthday party's Friday, so everybody's invited. I can't physically control my almost 2-year-old, right? I can't physically make him do the exact things I want him to do. So I'm definitely not going to make a 10-year-old do anything physically that I want him to do. It just doesn't work, okay? So we have to look at factors that we control in these circumstances, like where they go, what they do, things they get, things they don't get. That's how you're going to influence them more. And if the kid thinks he can influence that consequence, then you're probably not going to get anywhere, okay? If they think, you know, there's like a 1 out of 100 chance that mom said I can't get ice cream, but I can sneak and get it, then of course they're not going to change, right? Because they got in the back of their head, maybe I can still get it. You know, it's got to be something that you fully, fully control, that they have no influence. And then when you, one thing too, is that kid's looking for a reaction from you. It's a relationship, right? They're doing the exact same thing that we're doing. They're going to react and think, if I react this way, my parents are going to act this way, and that's going to benefit me, right? So they're already doing the exact same thing we're doing. So if you react emotionally, they're going to use it against you. I like to pick on my wife a lot. And if I can affect her emotionally, then I can use that against her. No joke. I know that sounds terrible. But, you know, if I call her short or whatever, if she gets upset about it, you know, then I can use that in all our other interactions. And I hope she's not learning anything from this today. So, you know, please focus on your reactions. You know, not just verbally, you're reacting by your cadence and the tone of your voice and physically. And you're going to influence your kids so much just by doing that. You know, 90% of communication is nonverbal. I know this is a very broad topic, and it's very hard to bottle it all down. I talk 9 hours a day about this stuff, and every conversation is different. You know, hopefully I've been of some benefit today. I know Jonathan wants to maybe conclude in a different way or bring up the longs or whatever, so I'm going to let him do that.
This one will have like some time, like a, I don't know how late it's getting to be, but kind of like a discussion time or whatever. And I wanted to have a panel of experts, so Troy, but also, you know the longs, right? And if you do know the longs, you know why I have such tremendous respect for them as a family and parents. And but at least one of their kids turned out pretty good, right, Sam? So I'm gonna get them to come up. And do you have any wisdom to impart to us? Have you been thinking about this? An opening statement?
Okay. Why am I here?
Why are you here?
No, seriously. When you mentioned this last week, I was like, you know, as the week went on and on, I was like, why am I here again?
Why am I doing this? This is not a good idea. Because you all see the sanitized version of the lungs, right? I mean, you see us for maybe an hour a week. We're kind of cleaned up and we're kind of friendly and all, but you don't see the fighting and the cussing and the hair pulling and the throwing. And that's just Lisa. Right? So, but I am serious. I mean, it's a lot of regrets, lots of missteps, lots of regrets of things that I did do, regrets about things I didn't do. So in no way, you know, I don't want anybody to look at us and think, hey, you know, that's the way to do it, because it's just not that easy. Parenting is very difficult, obviously. And I've got several things, I guess, I could get directions to go, but.
You could first.
Well, a couple things that come to mind. Okay, I remember. So when we were young parents, there was a book called Shepherding a Child's Heart that was really kind of instrumental in us, because you start to look at heart issues, not just kind of, you know, try to get to the root cause of some of the motivations of why kids behave the way they do, why we behave the way we do, right? And there was a chart in there that I've thought about many, many, many times. And, you know, on the bottom of the chart is time, and there's this arrow that's going up, and there's an arrow that's going down, right? And they kind of cross. And the arrow that's going down as time goes on is your authority over your kids. So that when they're very young, you have complete authority over them. You're going to change your diapers, you're gonna pick every meal for them, and you know, as they get older, that authority over them decreases until you get to the end and they move to New York, right? But also over time, your influence increases, and so the trick is to try to balance that, I think, and not that I've done it well, right, Sam? but that you know. You try to, just like with anybody else, I think, is you try to live your life so that you, and live by example so that you influence your kids. So that at the end of that one as well, you get on up, you know, on Skype with Hannah in New York, and you can still have a terrific conversation. So, so that's one of the things that influenced me. I think another thing is when we were young parents, there was our pastor at the time. They had five kids, just terrific kids, you know. And I remember saying to Mary, I said, you know, hey, you just got such great kids. And she said, oh, they're just little sinners like everybody else. And, you know, it was a throwaway little line, but I was like, you know, that's true. Just like everybody else. I mean, they... You know, I don't want to. Last week we made the point, you know, about that Lisa's got to come first in my life. You know, obviously Christ and or my faith, but then Lisa's got to come next, and my kids have got to know that, right? They've got to know that we're in this together. They're gonna move on with their lives, and that's what we want them to do. And we want to be, and at the end of that, Lisa and I are going to be here. So. And that's not just for that reason, I think, but I think that's a really important, because I don't know, you know, that's not getting into it too much, but that if you don't do that, it carries it, that shadow carries for many generations, I think. So you can jump in anytime.
Well, I think I would mainly say that I have had to grow up with my kids. I had a pretty easy childhood,
and then I came along.
I mean, it is when you have gone from, you know, just kind of doing everything for yourself, and then all of a sudden you're responsible, you know, for little kids. And I just did not realize everything that went into it. You know, I mean, it is a full-time job, but I can say that. My kids have been so forgiving of me, you know, when I've made mistakes. I can just go to them and tell them I'm sorry. And I think that's so important to do because, you know, we're not perfect. Nobody's perfect except the Lord Jesus. And we have relied on Him to help us. And I have had to go to my kids and ask them to forgive me many times for my temper. And it was a very good idea for me when I spanked to remove us both from the area of offense till I had time to calm down, you know, to kind of recollect myself and not just, you know, lash out in anger. I am Scottish and I'm very emotional. I know y'all don't know that, but there it is. But that has been very good advice for me. That may be from the shepherding a child's heart. But I told my kids, you know, why they were being spanked. And then after the spanking, you know, we had a time of, you know, I hugged the child and let them know, you know, that they're forgiven for what they do. And I'm not holding a record of accounts on them any more than the Lord is holding on me. And, you know, just let them know that they're loved and have a time of prayer together. You know, I don't know if the kids would agree, but I do believe the spankings probably were good ideas. But, you know, all I can say is just love your child in whatever thing you're doing, whether it be in discipline, whether it be just in spending time with them, you know, and be willing to say, I've made a mistake and I love you so much and will you forgive me? You know, be willing to do that. And my kids have been willing to do that. They are so, so willing to forgive. And that's a beautiful thing that we all need to learn from them. So, can't really think of much more than that.
I remember when I was a kid, and we actually had this thing called AM radio. Anybody remember AM radio? And you could at night get these broadcasts from exotic places like Cleveland. And but I remember listening to the radio one night, and I guess it was a pastor, and he was talking about kind of what you were talking about there a moment ago, is that he made this comment. He's like, you know, if you got a kid and he's, you know, doing something and doing a job for you, he says, don't leave it on a negative. He says, you know, well, Billy, you know, you messed up kind of here and here, but boy, the rest of it looked really good. You did a good job. I was like, wow, that's a novel idea. that just never occurred to me, or that to hear that. But so I think that is good advice. But.
Okay, cool.
I think one thing that has been really good for me to see is as they get older and they're starting to kind of take on some of the roles, you know, that you have, maybe they comfort you when you're upset, you know, and that just means so much. And I know I just remember one of my kids praying for me when I thought I had breast cancer. And it was a beautiful thing. And he was just a little guy. And he said, Mom, if you have breast cancer, does that mean you're going to die? And I said, well, I don't know. You know, kids, they just come right out and they'll say what they mean. And I said, we don't know that I have it, and we'll just take it one day at a time. And he said, well, Mama, does the Lord listen to children's prayers more than He does adults? And I've always thought that because I think they have less sin in their heart. So I said, yes, He does. So he said, can I pray for you? And he prayed for me. And when I went back, the spot was gone. There was no spot. So, you know, when you see those things, you know, I can beat myself up for the mistakes that I've made along the way, but God gives us those moments where you see that, you know, they are seeing His light in you. And I've told them, you know, you're not just accountable to me. I'm accountable to God. You know, we're all accountable to someone. That's kind of the way, you know, things are situated and the way things are laid out. And, you know, that's a good thing and not a bad thing. You learn to obey God by obeying me.
Cool. All right. Does anybody have any questions or other words of wisdom they want to share? Somebody cleared their throat. Anybody? Good opportunity.
Well, I love what you're doing and inviting the kids into the conversation of like how hard it is to be a good parent is so helpful because it's really hard. I mess up a lot. You know, just...
No. I think it's kind of a, yeah.
I mean, I love it.
Yeah.
That's all I got. Sorry.
Yeah, well, you're not the only one. Like these guys have said, everybody makes mistakes in parenting, you know, and that's just the fact of it, you know. We're not perfect, but the cool thing is the grace, you know.
That's right.
And if we, you know, we have an unlimited store of grace from God, and our kids are actually pretty darn good at showing grace to us, too. You know, which is cool. So we have to remember to have that same amount of grace with our kids and with their partners and with the other people we come into contact with.
Well, I think it's if you have a kid, it's like uphold you to this perfect standard, you know, because a lot of kids try to do that. You know, I see a lot of kids that are kind of harsh towards their parents when they mess up and stuff, and. Really, you know, there's something else going on there. That's like a surface symptom, right? There's something else in that dynamic that's causing them to say stuff like that. And most likely it's that they feel responsible, like they're a direct correlation or responsible for how well you do, right? So... If that goes both ways too, negatively and positively. So, if a kid thinks that he can influence my life negatively and make my quality of life go down, and I have a lot of kids that try to do that, then they can use it against me, right? And then if they know that they're vital to my mental well-being, then a lot of times they do it positively too, you know. But it is hard, you know. If a kid knows that. Hey, if I do this exact thing, then my parents are going to be upset or this is going to ruin their day. Then, you know, a kid is probably not advanced enough developmentally to understand, you know, the empathy consequences in that. So,
but it's a, you know, it's a wonderful thing. I mean, it's just unbelievable the experiences right out of the gate, right? Yeah. I mean, like the first day. So, you know, I wouldn't trade it for anything. And I wasn't all that great. I wasn't all that eager to be a parent, right? She was, but and I just now wish I had like four more.
Maybe you get another good one.
And it's
by your second wife.
I really like what the longs say about. Being self-aware, and if you think you're the perfect parent, then we've got a long ways to go, you know. And
yeah.
If you can think introspectively about how you're doing things, then that's the biggest step, I think.
Yeah, because you're gonna mess up, and it's okay. You know what I'll do.
I think love covers a multitude of sins. You know, yeah. When you mess up, I mean, just like I said, I mean, just being able to say you're sorry, and kids are just so forgiving. I mean, it's a beautiful thing. And if I had anything to do over again, it would be probably running less, you know, maybe running less to the violin lessons and the, you know, all the stuff I went to and spending more time at home. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but I think I was stretched thin in areas where I could have done better. You know, so your time with them is so important. You know, enjoy them while you've got them because they could be in New York or somewhere further tomorrow.
All right, good. Anybody else have a question or something? Do you have something else to say, Alan? Okay.
So I'll leave you with this. Is that? Oh, go ahead, Mark.
I just want to say from the four quadrants. personally, I don't want a mini-me. So I was talking to Alan. It's like, we kind of need all four of them. But, of course, smaller portions. So you got to let them learn on their own. They got to know how to fail. So you got to hold back and don't. Well, if you do this, you're gonna stub your toe. You gotta be in the left. You gotta be permissive. You gotta say, keep your nose clean. Don't mess up. Just so you need to me. You gotta believe in yourself and the kids to be a little bit neglectful.
Yeah.
Are they gonna learn a lesson from them? And are you gonna be there to bust them off the road?
I'm glad you bring that up, because it's just like God, when he tries to help us grow, if he directly tells us every little thing that we need to do, we're probably not going to grow very much, right? When I talk to a kid, it don't really matter if I know exactly what he needs to do. It matters if he knows exactly what he needs to do. So I'm asking questions, and I'm not giving these, like, judiciary statements to say, you do this, 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 and this, right? Because that's not sustainable, and life changes, and there's going to be different circumstances. We want him to have this base of knowledge, and then he can use that base in every aspect of his life. So, you know, Jesus, like when he talks to the high priest and stuff, he's asking questions, not just giving statements like, no, you're wrong, and this is why, right? And a lot of times kids, and I'm definitely like this, if somebody tells me to do something, I'm probably going to do the opposite. I won't lie to you. If my wife tells me to, like, go out and buy a brand new boat, I'm going to be like, no, because you told me to. I mean, that's the honest truth. So if they think it's their own idea and they develop it internally, and you're just asking questions, it is really sustainable. So,
cool.
I totally agree with what Mark was saying about, you know, letting your kids do some things on their own. I mean, when Hannah was little, I was scared to death she would get hurt. And I was behind her every step of the way when she was learning to walk. I thought she wouldn't be able to leave a room by herself. You know, and here she is in New York, going from a cow pasture in Cedar Springs.
And then Sarah came along. It's like, is it amazing, Sarah? In the
yeah, world? That's right. Yeah, the second and third one roll around, and you give them one of the dog toy pork chops, you know, to chew on, and it's like you'll be all right. You know, you just don't have the time that you have with the first one. You don't have time to obsess over every little thing. But I've joked with the kids. I told them, I said, when I die, I want you to put me in a freezer, and I'm going to have buttons to remind you of things like, did you change your underwear? Did you wear deodorant? I mean, you got to let things like that go, kids. I mean, they have to get the scrapes, bruises. They have to learn those things, and it's been hard for me to let them. It has really been hard for me, but it is so important, you know.
There's a kind of a cheesy poem that you might have heard of, and I'll close with this and then I'll go down, but it goes like this. Come to the edge. It's really high. Come to the edge. We might fall. Come to the edge. So they came, and he pushed them, and they flew.
All right. Thanks, guys.